Chapter 27. As soon as the Gulfstream landed in Las Vegas, Truett left Gunderson and Pilston with the plane and hailed a cab. The weather was clear and sunny, with a light breeze blowing down from the mountains outside Las Vegas. The dry air seemed to magnify the surroundings, and the mountains, though miles distant, seemed close enough to touch. Tossing his bag on the rear seat, Truett climbed in front with the driver.
"Where to?"
the driver asked in a voice that sounded like Sean Connery with a smoker's hack. "A dream world," Truett answered. The driver put the cab in gear and sped off away from the airport.
"Have you stayed at Dream World before?"
the cabbie asked as they were nearing the famed strip. "Nope," Truett said.
"It's a high-tech paradise," the driver said. "A man-created environment."
The driver slowed and entered the rear of a line of cabs and personal automobiles waiting to pull into the entrance.
"Be sure to catch the lightning storm out on the rear grounds this evening," he said,
turning sideways to look at Truett.
"The display is every hour on the hour."
The line moved forward, and the driver steered the cab onto a driveway leading toward the hotel. A few feet off the street, he drove through a portal with plastic strips hanging to the ground that reminded Truett of the entrances to food cold storage warehouses. Now they were inside a tropical forest. A jungle canopy stretched overhead, and the inside of the cab's windows began to fog from the humidity. The driver pulled in front of the main entrance and stopped.
"When you get out," he said, "watch for the birds. I had a customer last week who claimed he was dive-bombed and pecked."
Truett nodded and paid the driver. Then he climbed out, opened the rear door, and retrieved his bag, then closed the door again and motioned for the cabbie to pull away. Turning, he watched as a bellman shooed away a thick black snake from the main doors with a broom. Then he glanced up at the canopy overhead. There was no sunlight visible, and the sound of birds chirping filled the space. Lifting his bag, Truett walked over to the bellman's stand.
"Welcome to Dream World," the bellman said. "Are you checking in?"
"Yes," Truett said, handing the bellman a fake driver's license from Delaware and a credit card that was tied to the false identity. The bellman swiped both through a machine and then took an adhesive-coated strip that printed out and slapped it on Truett's bag.
"We will send your bag to your room on our conveyor system," he said efficiently. "The room will be ready and the bag will be in the room."
He paused to stare at the computer screen.
"In 10 minutes. There is a front desk inside if you wish to arrange casino credit or for anything else you might need. Have a great stay here at Dreamworld."
Truett handed the bellman a 10, took the card key for the door, and walked toward the entrance. The twin glass doors opened automatically, and what Truett saw inside astounded him. It was as if the natural world had been brought indoors. Just inside the door was a man-made lazy river with guests riding on small boats. In the distance, to the left, Truett could just make out the figures of people scaling an artificial alpine peak. He watched as snow cascaded down, only to be swallowed up by an opening at the base. Truett shook his head in amazement. Truett continued on until he came to an information desk.
"Which way to the nearest bar?" he asked the clerk.
The clerk pointed in the distance.
"Just past Stonehenge on the right, sir."
Truett walked into a domed area and passed an exact-sized replica of Stonehenge. An artificial sun was mimicking the summer solstice, and the shadows formed an arm that pointed to the center. Finding the door to the bar, a thick, planked affair, peering out from under a thatched roof, Truett opened it and entered the dimly lit room. The bar was a replica of an old English roadhouse. Walking over to a stool constructed from wood, leather, and boar's horns, Truett sat down and stared at the bar itself. It was a massive slab of wood that must have weighed as much as a dump truck. The bar was empty, save Truett, and the bartender approached from the side.
"Grog or mead, my lord?" she asked.
Truett considered this for a moment.
"Mead, I guess," he said finally. "Good choice," the bartender said. "It's a little early for grog."
"My thoughts exactly," Truett said, as the bartender reached for a glass and began to fill it from a wooden cask behind the bar. The bartender was dressed in the costume of a serving wench. Her bosom spilled out of the top of the uniform. Setting the glass in front of Truett, she made a half-bow, then backed away down the bar. Truett sipped the drink and sat in the dark room thinking about the man who had created this man-made wonderland, and how he would break into the man's office to search.
"How much do I owe you?" Truett asked the bartender.
"I can put it on your room card," the bartender offered.
"I'll just pay cash."
"Morning special," the bartender said. $1.
Truett sat a few ones on the bar, then walked through the dim room and out the door. Turning left past Stonehenge, he entered a massive atrium. In the distance, a chairlift led toward the top of a ski mountain with the crest covered in clouds. Walking past the base of the mountain where people on skis were waiting to take the chairlift up, he watched a few skiers coming down the hill as the fake snow flew through the air like real powder. Continuing past, he came upon an information booth.
"Do you have maps of the hotel?" Truett asked the clerk.
The man smiled and withdrew a map from below the counter and marked their location with a felt-tip pen. Truett handed the clerk his door card.
"How do I find my room?" he asked.
The clerk ran the card through the scanner and stared at the details on the screen. Taking the pen again, he made notes on the margin of the map.
"Take the River of Dreams to Owl Canyon, and exit the boat at Mine Shaft 17. Then board elevator 41 for the ride up to your floor."
"Sounds easy enough,"
Truett said as he gathered up the map and slid his room card back in his pocket.
"That way, sir," the clerk said, motioning.
30 yards past the information kiosk, Truett came to a railing along the river that led to a boarding station. There, a line of canoes was awaiting passengers. Attached to a cable like an amusement ride, the canoes circled the hotel on a river with no beginning or end. Truett climbed into the first one in the line and stared at the control pad. Entering Mine Shaft 17 on the keypad, he sat back and waited a moment as the canoe lurched from the stop. It headed down through a false canyon with rocky walls. Once the canoe automatically stopped at his destination, Truett climbed out and walked toward a bank of elevators. Finding 41, he rode it up to his floor, then exited and walked down a long hallway to his room. Using the card key, he unlocked the door. The room was decorated in a mining town motif. The walls were paneled with weathered wood planks and accented with pressed tin. A sagging bookshelf with old books and novels was propped against the wall. On another side was an old gun rack with fake Winchester rifles bolted down. The bed was wrought iron, piled with what looked like antique quilts. It was as if Truett had been transported back in time. Truett walked over to the window, parted the drapes, and stared down at Las Vegas, as if to ensure himself that the world outside was still the same. Then he closed the drapes again and walked into the bathroom. Although it was decorated to appear old, it featured a steam shower and tanning lamps. Splashing some water on his face, he dried himself off, then walked back into the room to telephone Hanley.
"Hickman can plan a major operation," Truett said when Hanley answered. "That's for sure. You would not believe this place. It's like a theme park with slots."
"Halpert is still researching him," Hanley said. "But he's secretive. Have you devised a plan to search his office yet?"
"Not yet, but I'm working on it."
"Be careful. Hickman is very powerful, and we don't want any backlash if it turns out he's not involved."
"I'll get in and out as quietly as possible," Truett said.
"Good luck, Mr. Phelps,"
Hanley said. Truett started humming the theme to Mission Impossible as he disconnected. Sitting down at the roll-top desk in the room, Truett studied the hotel map and the building plans that Hanley had faxed to the Gulfstream before they had landed. Then he took a shower, changed clothes, and left the room. He took the elevator down, boarded a canoe, and rode it to the main entrance. Then he walked outside and hailed a cab. After explaining his destination to the driver, he sat back and waited. A few minutes later, the driver pulled up in front of the tallest hotel in Las Vegas. Truett paid the fare and climbed out. Then he walked into the lobby, purchased a ticket, and rode a high-speed elevator to the hotel's observation deck. The entire city of Las Vegas was stretched out beneath him. Truett stared at the view for a few minutes, then walked over to one of the viewers and inserted a few coins. While most of the other tourists scanned the high-powered binoculars from side to side, Truett kept his trained on just one spot. Once the reconnaissance was completed, Truett rode the elevator down, hailed another cab, returned to Dream World. It was still a little early, so he went to his room and took a nap. It was just after midnight when he awoke. Brewing a pot of coffee, using the pot in the bathroom, he sipped the cup to help himself wake up. Then he shaved, showered again, and walked back into the room. Digging into his bag, he removed a black T-shirt and black jeans and dressed. He removed a pair of rubber-soled black shoes from the bag and slid them on his feet. Then he repacked his bag and called the bellman to have it delivered to the front door. Gunderson had been told to pick it up in 10 minutes. Before leaving the room, he removed a strangely padded jacket from his bag and slid it over his shoulders. After taking the boat to the lobby, he entered the casino. Groups of vacationers, eyes red from lack of sleep, filled most of the seats at the tables and in front of the slot machines. Even this late at night, the casino was a moneymaker. Continuing on through the casino, he entered the mall inside the hotel. The mall was a cornucopia of excessive consumption. Nearly 75 brand-name stores and boutiques were located along a cobblestone walkway. Along with the 20 or so designer clothing stores were shoe shops, a luggage store, jewelry shops, restaurants, and a bookstore. Truett still needed to kill some time, so he entered the bookstore and flipped through the newest Stephen Goodwin novel. Goodwin, a young author from Arizona, had spent the last few months at the top of the charts. Truett could not carry a book right now, but he made a mental note to pick up the novel before he left Las Vegas. Leaving the bookstore, Truett entered a barbecue restaurant and ordered a plate of ribs and an iced tea. Once he finished those, he decided it was time. Hickman's penthouse, high atop Dream World, featured decks on all four sides. Glass walls that slid back allowed entrance to the decks, which had a forest of carefully trimmed trees and pots. The pinnacle of the penthouse was pyramid-shaped, with a copper roof still new and gleaming. Tiny pin lights lit the trees and pinnacle. Riding the elevator up to the next-to-highest floor, Truett recalled the building plans. Exiting the elevator, he peered down the hallway and found it empty. Then he walked to the far end of the hall and found a white metal ladder bolted to the wall. Truett climbed the ladder until it ended at a door locked with a padlock on a clasp. Taking a plastic sleeve from a pouch in his pocket, Truett slid the thin shaft into the lock and twisted a small knob on the top. The knob released a catalyst that made the plastic sleeve harden inside the lock. A few seconds later, Truett twisted the shaft, and the lock sprung open. He removed the lock from the clasp, opened the door upward into the crawl space, and climbed inside. The plans had called this area a service access walkway. Cables for power, plumbing, and communications filled the space. Truett closed the door again and turned on his flashlight. Slowly, he crawled down the walkway toward where the plans showed another door that led up to the deck. When observing the deck from the other hotel, Truett had noticed a sliding door cracked open. The open door was his best chance to enter the penthouse undetected. Reaching the door beneath the deck, Truett used another of the plastic sleeves to open the lock, then carefully swung it up and peered out. There was no alarm. No indication he'd been detected. Keeping low to avoid being seen, Truett climbed out onto the deck, closed the door, and crept toward the still open door. Prying it slowly back, he peered inside. No one was visible, and he carefully entered. Truett was in the huge open living room of the penthouse. A half-round sunken conversation pit with padded benches encircled a rock fireplace. Off to one side, lit only by a light above the stove, was a commercial-style kitchen. To the other side was a massive wet bar with beer taps mounted into the wall. The room was lit by unseen lights into a sort of twilight. Bluegrass music played through invisible speakers. Truett crept down the hall toward where the plans showed Hickman's office.